June 30, 2021. It's a Watt from Pedro's show.
Well, I tell you, I had some trouble at that time. I did a foolish thing. I got dissatisfied with my mouthpiece. And I had some work done on this thing. And instead of making it better, it ruined it. And it really it discouraged me, you know, a little bit, because I couldn't. There were certain aspects of that, of playing that certain fast thing that I was reaching for, that I couldn't get, you know, pushed because I damaged this thing.
Watt from Pedro Show. Happy Wednesday. Started the show off with an excerpt from John Coltrane talking to Frank Kosky in 1966. Little excerpt. Had some trouble with his mouthpiece. Then we had Loop Guru, which makes me think of Captain Beef. People, you can tell I'm not a man alone, right? Brother Matt's on the Pleasure Point. Love Grotto. But those Estonian software engineers with their Skype software makes it possible for Walter Wright. Thank you for coming aboard, Walter.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. And I was going to say about this tune that you gave me. It's untitled, but it was live, and it's from a project. Actually, I think it's a few tunes that got melted together because I hear, or maybe one tune broke up because there's people applauding in between shit. And it's called Captain Beefheart, Loop Guru. I don't know if there's any relation between the Proj name and a Captain Beefheart song, but...
No, there isn't, actually. It just turned out to be a good name. The other person that I'm playing with is from Lowell, Cambodian, Satani Pen. I met her when she played in a band called Ralph Eats Dynamite.
Yeah.
She was a teenager at the time, and it was like a teenage punk band from up the street when we opened the gallery. So
great. She
was the drummer.
Well, much respect. So, she was the drummer. Okay.
Yeah. Yes, Satani was the drummer for Ralph Eats Dynamite.
Oh, no. I thought we were talking about Loop Guru.
No, that's the name of our little project.
I understand. After. That's her foundation.
Loup Garou. Yes. Werewolf in French.
Yeah, we have a Cambodia community in Long Beach, Strong Beach, across the...
Indeed you do.
Yeah, east part of the harbor here. I'm on the west part, right, the Los Angeles part. Also the north part's Los Angeles, that's Weymouth, Wilmington. So, look, Walter, I want to learn about your journey through music. Can you bring me your earliest musical recollection in your life?
Oh, my goodness. The earliest musical recollection, probably at our cottage in Kincardine on Lake Huron, listening to the radio, but also, like, listening to all the sounds in the woods. That's probably my first real recollection.
Now, this pad you were in, well, nature, that's the primary band, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I'm glad. I'm sorry.
Oh, I've always had this, like, idea about nature as being a good source for composition and for material, both visually and sound-wise.
Absolutely. Let's say almost fundamental, right? It's where we springeth forth from.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Back to the roots.
Back to the roots. Exactly. You got it, Walter. So, Walter, in this pad, was it Michigan or Illinois?
I was born in Ottawa, Ontario.
Ah, true north, Canada. Okay.
I'm a Canuck.
That's okay. I'm way into it. Way into it. Yeah. Okay. This pad you were, as a boy, was there music?
There was a piano in the house, and I took piano lessons, and I hated it.
Ah, there's the lesson, right? The indicator right there about the Canadian. You said house. Yeah. Although you've gotten rid of most of it, but that's the one thing that kind of gives, what'd you say, Canucks away. Yeah, a little bit. So your experience, like a lot of people, guests on my show, with piano lessons was horrible. And what do you attribute that to? The teacher?
In that case, it was just I was a very active boy. And sitting there learning this, doing this stuff over and over again just didn't interest me. I wanted to make, like, if I could have played an organ, that would have been great. I would have loved to, like, make a really big sound.
Yeah.
But doing all this clinky stuff, that, you know, that just didn't interest me.
Well, what about the idea of it being percussive? Did that hit on you yet?
Yeah, I mean, well, piano, I played it like a percussion instrument.
That's what I'm saying. And I know in the old days of swing bands that the piano was in the rhythm section with the guitar, the bass, and the drums.
Yeah. But I never really got that far because we were doing, like, all this, you know, lesson stuff.
Yeah.
But I like my friend, another drummer, says, you know, I like to hit things.
Right. Because I was going to ask you, you jumped on it and shit. What about what about the first record you bought with your own money?
Well, let me see. My background is architecture, believe it or not.
I believe it.
Yeah. And then I went into video. And I was really interested in electronics. So the first instrument that I bought and assembled was a Surge modular synthesizer.
Oh, no. No, I didn't mean instrument, man. I meant record, like music.
Ah. So.
Like when you were a boy, right?
Oh, well, no, that was, when I was a boy, I really didn't have an instrument.
No. What I'm asking you is, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
Oh, the first records I bought. Oh, yeah. Man. The first music that I really got into was, I grew up in Kitchener, Ontario. Western Ontario. It's an industrial city.
Right. Yep. I know where it is.
And we used to listen to Nashville radio. We used to listen to the late night blues show. So the first music that I bought were 78s.
Ah, great.
And we mail ordered them from Nashville.
Okay. How much did it cost?
I ran a little dance down at St. John's Church on Saturday nights, and we played all of our 78s that we got from Nashville.
So you were like a DJ.
Yep.
Now, I'm curious, Walter, how much did a 78 cost to get from Nashville to Canada?
Oh, man, I can't remember. I remember they weren't very expensive.
Yeah. You know? But they're thick and heavy, right, compared to a vinyl.
Well, 78, it's like that, you know. So 78, it's like big vinyl and all that stuff.
But more heavy, more thick, so I was just wondering if it... And the customs wasn't that much money?
Nope. Customs was fine. I mean, you just couldn't get them in the record shops. You had to mail order that stuff.
I understand. Yeah. What was the first gig you saw?
The first gig I saw? Probably, again, in Kitchener, because we were fairly close to Detroit. So when the musicians would come up along the shore of Lake Huron in the summer to play, they would often land up in Kitchener. So I saw Jerry Lee Lewis.
Ah, great.
Bo Diddley.
Yeah.
I saw a bunch of those guys early on up in Kitchener. And it was a good town for them to play in because working class people came out and danced. Sure. You know, we had bands at the roller rink.
Yeah. What can I ask you about school, like grade school and junior high and high school? Were you in the marching band or the choir or shit like that?
No, I wasn't, actually. I played sports and stuff. I did that, but I really was not much of a team person.
Okay. So. And then you went to college to do architecture. And then what made you get that synthesizer?
Oh, because when I graduated as an architect, I worked for a little bit, and I decided, man, you know, I never got a license. I just, you know, I'm not into this stuff, you know, like just designing schools that look like prisons and things. That's not my idea of architecture. So I went into computer aided design, computer graphics. So I was doing computer graphics.
Ah, so the pewter was the connect to the synths.
That was the connection.
Yeah.
And I worked with some friends in Toronto. We had a little business doing computer graphics consultants, and we applied for a government grant to start to help our little business. And we got this letter back that said, Canadians don't do this. We don't have the computers. We don't have any interest. You're not getting any money, basically. And about a week later, I got a call from New York City and a job offer. So that's when I moved to the States.
You emigrated.
About 1969.
You emigrated. Okay.
Yeah, and I moved to New York, and I did. I worked doing computer graphics, and I ran across a company there, my second year there, called Computer Image Corporation. And they did animated letters for Children's Television Workshop. So when the little letters came out on the screen, we did that animation. Oh, we did it with the Scanimate video synthesizer or computer, right?
Okay.
And I also was very interested in kind of electronic music at that point. So I was going out and listening to people. I saw Phil Glass do his first concert at WBAI in studio.
Wow. Pacifica Station.
You know, I saw a couple of other synthesizer players, a group called Insect Trust.
Yeah.
I also became a producer at The Kitchen. And the Kitchen was down in Mercer.
Sure.
A lot of electronic music as well. Alvin Lucier, all of those people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. So after about a year there, I showed some of my videos. I was doing videos, basically. I showed some of my videos at the Avant-Garde Art Festival. And the director of the Experimental Television Center was there, Ralph Hawking. And he said, hey, why don't you come up to Binghamton as artist in residence?
SUNY, right? There's a college here.
Yeah, a Harper College. Now it's SUNY Binghamton.
Yeah.
So I went to the Experimental Television Center
early on as
an artist in residence. And my job was to work with the Paik Abe video synthesizer. And I thought, I need some sound to go along with this if I'm doing sort of live presentation.
Sure.
So that's when I got the Surge.
Wow. That's amazing. I want to play this thing that you gave me. It's called Brooks / I guess you're collaborating with a man named or a person named Brooks, and something called a Good Archive.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Started picking up a bunch of stuff all at once. Could barely rid ourselves of the edges and pumice and little shoes that stuck to our arms and thighs. It was like we suddenly forgot everything. About those years. I learned a few things about myself and about the world at that time. We started to try pain as soon as it became available. I don't think it became clear that we were learning anything until we started picking up a whole bunch of shit all at once. Could barely rid ourselves of all the edges and the gravel and the little shoes which stuck to our arms and thighs. I learned a few things about myself during that time. Sense at all about those years. I have no sense of time about that time. I learned some things about myself and about the world. stumbling, the beat of the street. Long Island, a smooth back joggling out of the water, jumbling, it wears like a $1 bin, clothing that used to be interesting. Kind of like a donut filled with glittering water. Maybe you remember. A hot blanket without a coverlet.
Thank you.
Watford Pedro Show. That chunk of music started with A Good Archive from Brooks/Wright. And then we had Untitled from Apocalypso.
Ooh.
Now, can we back up a little bit? Because you're a drummer man, too. And I don't... Where did that start?
Where did that start? When I was at the Television Center, one of my jobs was to assist the artist coming in to work in the studio. So at that point, I met Carol Goss. Carol Goss is Paul Bouey's partner. And that's where I met Paul Bouey.
Yeah.
And as a fellow Canadian, you know, we kind of hit it off.
Yeah.
And when Paul saw my videos, he said, "Walter, you're a drummer."
Wow.
And I said, "What do you mean I'm a drummer? I don't keep time, you know? I mean, I don't do any of that stuff, you know? I was still making like electronic sounds at that point." He says, "Here, listen to this LP." And he gave me an LP with himself and forget who was playing bass on that one. Dave Holland, maybe.
Great bass man.
And Barry Altschul. And he said, "Barry doesn't keep time either."
Or Rashid Ali. Rashid Ali, too, I was going to say.
So that was the first indication that I might pursue that.
So it was like, Paul Bouey, make it be so command. Okay. So Walter, tell me your first drum set. What was it?
I didn't have a drum set for a long time. I just did electronics. And then when we opened the gallery a couple of years ago, all of a sudden these drum parts started accumulating in the basement. And when I played with Satani in Lugaru, she said, "Why don't you just put that together and make a drum set? We'll both play drums and we'll both do electronics." And I said, "Well, sounds good to me."
Bitchin'. You know, they say trap set, right? Nowadays, for you know what that word is? It's an abbreviation for contraption.
Yes, contraption. Yeah.
So it is whatever's in the fucking basement, right?
Yep. So I really still don't have a complete drum set. You know, I have various things. Basically, I have only purchased things like stands, you know, when the old ones broke. All of my drum kit is, you know, picked up from the basement of the old gallery.
Well, I've seen like drum stands from the 60s and 50s. They're really tiny. You can't hit them too hard.
No, and I tend to like, yeah, I need something a little more robust.
A little beefy. But you know what? The good thing is that they're easier to carry around for the schlep, you know?
Yeah.
that's amazing. So going back to the synth, yeah, so you were playing kind of drum machine. Okay, you were using like what? A sequencers or oscillators to get beats going?
Yeah, basically with the Surge, I was using the oscillators, and I never really used envelope followers or VCAs very much, but Surge had an output mixer that had voltage control VCAs built in.
Yeah.
So I just used universal slope generators to set up rhythm patterns, and then I fed those to the oscillators, you know, gave them a little expression with the filters, and then used the output mixer to do the, you know, to do the VCA function. So yeah, I was doing, yeah, basically that's how I generated my beats.
And can I ask you about the keyboard? Some synthesizers ended up being connected to keyboards and stuff. Did you ever get into that?
Never.
Yeah.
No. I still remembered my bad keyboard experience.
That's what I was going to say. You want to go back to that chapter.
Yeah, the only keyboards I ever used was, I used an Ensoniq for a long time, but as a sampler.
Okay.
You know, so when I triggered the keys, I triggered them like for samples.
And yeah, it was turning on and off little tape recorders.
Yeah, you know.
But you can pitch them and shit and weird them out. Now, very interesting. What about as far as performances go? with the drums. What was the first, when the first time you played drums in front of people?
In front of people? Oh, probably like, it's got to be just like 10 years ago or so. Before that, all of my performances were with the electronics.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, and the first time I think I got out the drum set, it was probably about 10 years ago when I played with Satani.
Okay. And how can you compare the experiences of performing in front of people electronic, performing people with the drum set?
Ah, well, that's a really interesting question, you know, and I haven't thought much about it, but now that you mention it, yeah, I mean, electronics, a lot of it's in your head, right?
Yeah.
So all of that stuff that I was doing was kind of in my head, you know, so I wouldn't be playing with, you know, I'd only playing with what's between my ears, basically. But the drums,
yeah,
which is really interesting, you play with your whole body, you know,
right.
You're working on it. You know, if you think about it, you're lost.
Right, exactly. George Hurley told me it was like balancing your body on your tailbone while all your limbs are moving.
Yeah, that's kind of like it. And also, if you kind of like, because I never played with a real band that counted or anything like that, I was more interested in like reacting to the sounds that I heard from the other people. So, you know, and if you think about that, because I did a lot of improv.
Yeah.
If you think about it, you're already lost.
Right. Mm-hmm. You're behind.
It has to come without thinking.
Absolutely. Feel it, right? Can I ask you, who are your friends singing in the background?
Oh, on which? Oh, that's George.
Okay.
That's George Cherokee.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
George is on a lot of my recordings.
Also, it goes in with that thing about like kind of nature being a source.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And parakeets really like noise. So George has always been part of like the studio. Things like vacuum cleaners. Yeah. He really loves those.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember first time I went to Australia, and they got buttloads of them, lorikeets, too. I mean, you know, because I only knew them as pets in people's pads, but they got wild ones, cockatoos, too. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, June 30, 2021 edition of Wild Pedro Show. Special guest Walter Wright. Hold tight for hour two. June 30, 2021. It's the second hour of the Walk from Pedro Show.
Oh, Gerhard Richter. Is that a title? That's a guy.
That's a guy.
And a title. They named a book up there.
Oh, all right.
Gerhard Richter.
This is for Jerry.
For Gerhard.
Gerhard.
Jerry.
Jerry.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. We start off the second hour with Tough Day Tube and tune something live, a tune called Gerhard Richter. And then after that we had If Wanna with A *... Does It. So I was trying to think of what fucking cuss word that is, but can't think. And then finally Robodeau/Right with Untitled.
Yes.
Enlighten us to this stuff, Walter.
Oh, that one was one of my Corona collabs. I just sent files to a bunch of people whose music I enjoyed, and one of them was Matt Robidoux. And he sent that back almost right away, and it was like, wow, Matt, this is awesome. it was really good. Yeah, so I like that. Matt's out in, I guess he's still out in California, actually.
Okay. Yeah. So this thing about trading files, you've been doing that a while.
Yeah, I've been doing that, especially when the Corona thing hit. That's where I started just sending out files.
Oh, you didn't do it before that? Because I've been doing it for the last 15 years.
I did before, but when we got the lockdown, that became my only outlet. So,
sure.
Wow.
And out there, tell me about your connect with Al Margolis, because we got to give him credit for making this connect for the show. But what about, when did you learn about If Wanna?
Oh, man. That would be way back. I used to order, like, mail order records. And remember, I started with the Baboonies,
but then right.
Later on, I got in contact with the Tape Exchange people. So that's where I met Al.
That's right, because he's a big...
Sound of Pig.
Yeah.
Remember Sound of Pig?
That's
yeah,
right.
So I ordered tapes from Al. and I ordered stuff from Ron Lassard.
Okay.
So that's from RRR Records in Lowell. So those are my two sources.
Okay. And you so, got that. You, and,
well, from like just by contact, letter contact for quite a while.
No,
I didn't meet till later.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times that's the way it is, right? It's the music
yeah.
and the lifeline. But point I want to make is like people ask me about the old days. I say it was about people. And I think today, too, it's always going to be about people. Now,
yeah.
now you're in a. We started off the second hour with a tune that has Al Margolis in it. This Tough Day Tubin. Tell me about that.
Ah, well, let's see. Al and I, we did. We started playing together, of course, because he lives not too far away from me in New York, Chester, New York.
So
we started like playing it with different people, and. At some point, we decided we would like to go out and do a little tour. And that song that you heard, that was a what we did was we got people in the audience. We were playing at the Spotty Dog.
Oh, yeah.
And we got people to give us song titles by looking at the books. So they could give us a song title by either using the title of a book or an author or maybe a quote. And that was Gerhard Richter. Somebody from the audience gave us that as a song title.
Okay.
Because so we had no real songs, but, you know, we made them up on the spot.
Yeah, I think it's called improvisation. No? Yeah. Okay. And there was another member in the band, right, too, also?
There was Al, myself, Steve Norton,
okay.
who's a free player from Boston.
Sure.
When I first came to Boston, that was one of the first bands I saw, was Steve Norton's band, Debris.
Yes.
And Debris played for about a year and then disappeared completely. And then I ran across Steve Norton maybe 6 or 7 years later in the improv community.
Uh-huh.
And he played with... was one of the musicians that were part of Ensemble on AD and Body Drama, which was a mixed group of dancers and musicians.
Interesting.
And that's where, you know, I got to talk to him. And he said, yeah, well, my degree's in music, and I wanted to be a professional musician, but after the first year where we traveled all over the country with Debris, they sent me a check for $400.
Okay.
At that point, I said, fuck it. I'm not doing this. I'm just not doing this. And he dropped out for a period of years. And then he said that he came back. But he came back, like, on his own terms.
Okay. Yeah. I want to play this thing you sent me called Land/Right.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Québécois, I'm the Québécois, are always telling her, you speak French very well for an anglais. Fuck you, I'm French! You know? it's an interesting dialect.
Well, it got frozen, right? Like it's a couple hundred, they're using these old-fashioned words and stuff. That's what I was told.
Right. They use old-fashioned French. Yeah.
And like, yeah, I remember the big cuss word, the big cuss word I learned in Montreal was tabernacle. You know, it's just shit from the church, right?
Yep, tabernacle.
Yes. So, of course, when I got on stage, that was the first thing I said to the audience.
Yep. Well, Emmanuel has a really interesting space in La Havre. They have one of the old bunkers that was used to defend the harbor in the war.
Yeah, right.
And it's been converted into, like, artist space.
Oh, that's great. I played something like that in Brest, part of France. But it was a Nazi U-boat thing. But they couldn't tear it up. It was so built up, so they turned it into a gig place. Let me tell the people what we just heard. We heard an untitled piece, Lalande / Wright, and then one another untitled piece, Beck / Wright.
Oh, Beck! That's another Frenchman.
Okay.
He's from the south of France, though. He's from Montpellier. He's a drummer.
Oh, Montpellier! Yeah. Good town, a college town. He's a drummer, man. Okay.
Matou Beck.
Well, tell me about both these pieces you said.
Emmanuel, I met Emmanuel when he came here with a group, his own group called Nozzle Cube. Nozzle Cube arrived at our gallery from France with Jack Wright. They were touring with Jack Wright.
Jack Wright, the tenor player.
Yep.
Yeah, the free music.
They were touring with Jack.
He sent me his book. He sent me his book, The Free Music, and I read it, and I was very inspired by it.
Oh, good. Yep. Well, I've known Jack for a long time. In fact, I did a show here in Boston with Jack Wright, Ben Wright, and Walter Wright. Ben Wright's his son. So we were the three Wright brothers.
Right, but are you related?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not.
But him and his boy are, of course, yeah.
So anyway, so Nozzle Cube arrived, and they were great. And they came back a couple of more times, and then they eventually became part of what we call, we do our yearly improvisational music, dance, and visual festival called X-Fest. In the whole X-Fest, Massachusetts, and they arranged to like come and play at X-Fest. So I've known them now for 10 years. Emmanuel and his friend Arnaud Lemindou.
Uh-huh. And so did you propose to him that you'd collaborate?
Yeah, and then when the lockdown came, Al also knows them very well.
Yeah.
He said, "Well, we got to send some files to Emmanuel and Arnaud." So some files up there online with them that Al and I are both on.
Okay, great. And the Lalande piece with you?
That was just myself and Emmanuel. Yeah.
But how did that happen?
That happened. That was one of my Corona collab.
Oh, so it's kind of recent.
Files.
Okay.
I see when I get back. Yep.
Okay. And who started
that? That was also the case with, I think, the one you played earlier on from Kai Brook. Kai Brooks. They live in Montreal.
A good archive.
And that was another one of those ones where I just sent a file and I got this back. I said, holy mackerel.
Right.
This is awesome.
So you actually instigated these collabs.
Yeah, in this case, I was the one who sent them files, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Well, somebody's got to be the fire starter.
Yep, that's right.
And you know, and like you said, right away they come back to you. That's what a righteous thing one musician can do for another.
What's that?
That they came right back with their collab, you know?
Oh, yeah.
To make the connect like that is such a gift that one musician can do for another one.
I mean, of all the ones I sent out, there were a couple that didn't come back, so that was okay. I mean, the ones that came back right away were usually the ones that had like the most energy. They were, you know, they didn't think about it. They just sat down and played.
You know, I've been doing more and more of that because I got hit when the iron's hot, and that's. That means emotions, too, I think. And so your first impressions, you never get that back. So why not try to squeeze on that?
Yeah, I think so, And a lot of the people I sent them to were improvisers anyway. So, I mean, I didn't,
So now, do you have a little studio set up in your pad?
I do. Right now it's about 100 degrees up there because it's in the edge. So I'm not up there. I'm down here with the bird. When I had the gallery, we had a large loft space, so I had everything set up in the space. We've moved since we closed the gallery, and I'm in a smaller space, but I still have my studio, you know, right there.
Sure. And is there a drum set set up in there?
I have a drum set set up in the attic for myself, and there's another drum set, our landlord, who are friends. There's another full kit in the basement, and I just played one of our first live gigs since the lockdown with Bonnie King down in the basement.
And how'd that go?
It went great.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
Okay. Okay. Love to hear it, you know. I never thought anything was going to be canceled. It was just postponed. Just got to get through this. Yeah. And when you... composers, do you have any kind of like scores?
Sometimes I do. I've actually been working on that with a couple of different people. I've been trying to generate scores based on observations of the real world. So, you know, kind of like a sound walk. Yeah. I do a visual walk. So I go out and I do that. And then I often use the sort of the way that goes together, I translate that into a score for sound.
Interesting.
So, and I'll sometimes use the recordings that I made in the field, you know, when I was...
Right. So you got like kind of a library?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll incorporate those along with material that I generate. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
But it's not much of a composition. I don't write out notes or anything. It's usually a graphic score.
Okay.
That's what we work with a lot in improv, in that group that does the dance.
Yeah. I'm learning about it, you know, because it's all new to me coming from rock and roll and stuff, but it's really interesting to me. We're at the end of the second hour, June 30, 2021, edition Watt Pedro Show. Special guest, Walter Wright. Hold tight for hour three. June 30, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. Start off the third hour with an untitled live track from Los Condenados. And then we had El Cabong, which I think is Al Margolis connected to. A tune called Minus. Enlightenous, Walter, please.
Ah, well, let's see. I'll start with Los Condenados because that's the... You've already interviewed Andrea Pensado.
Oh, yeah. Right? She's great.
Yep. So Los Condenados was Andrea, myself, and Sid Vasilenko.
Oh, she's Argentina. And yeah.
He's the man who plays the bamboozle.
The bamboozle.
Which is basically a bamboo soprano saxophone.
Right.
Yep. And he plays it with kind of like, oh, just such energy.
Yeah.
So playing with Jules Vasilenko, sorry. Playing with Jules, and Andrea was like hanging on, you know, trying to keep up because the two of them are such high energy, right?
Yeah.
Yep. I remember we did a show at the White House. In the basement, it was a venue in Jamaica Plain, and we were like in the corner, and we started playing, and all of a sudden, everyone in the house was gathered in front of us. Some of them standing on chairs too high, so it was completely froze. And Steve Norton was actually trying to record it, so he was standing out in front, kind of like a guard.
Century.
At one point, some guy landed in my lap. I was playing the circuit board. I was playing the board weasel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But yeah, that was high energy. That was really
board weevil. Board weevil.
The board weevil, yeah.
Explain, please.
Well, I actually switched to that. Because, you know, when you play, like I said, the electronic music was kind of between your ears, right?
Right.
Because when you were working with a synthesizer. Well, this was a little kit that Tom Bugs built. Tom Bugs of Bug Brand in England. He built this little kit for a workshop to try and teach kids about electronics. And it has a lot of touch controls on it. No keys. You know, it has some pots on it for oscillators. But the touch controls were really sensitive and quite handy. And I found that, boy, here's the first electronic instrument that I can really relate to emotionally, like make expression.
Sure.
You know? And it doesn't make sounds like any other instrument in the whole world. It's just three square wave oscillators plus a filter and, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
And battery starves, so the whole thing can go south. You just turn that knob. Right? And I eventually, it took me a while to learn how to play it. It took like about 6 years to learn how to play it. You know, but it was great because I put it into an old big old bass amp.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, and man, that thing was loud, and playing with Andrea and Jules was perfect. It was just a total onslaught of noise.
Arriba, arriba. Look, I'm gonna play
board weevil. I still play the board weevil.
Okay, the board. I gotta check that out. Yeah, like hand capacitance, right?
Yeah.
No physical switches. I want to play some.
There's some switches on it that'll allow you to do syncing, and it's actually a pretty nicely designed little board.
What I meant was the way you play it is it's more like no mechanical.
Right, the way you play it really is with your fingers.
Yeah, you know? right. I want to play some more El Cabong here.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
Subculture. A salad of futures. A toothpaste idea. You will lose track. You will sleep all over the place. Your skin will be thick with wool and chills will light on your shoulder. Where there's a chip. In wreck and fantastic excess. I'm so sick of subculture. A salad of futures. A two-faced idea. You will lose track. You will sleep all over the place. Our friend's birthday. Have you had left and one on the right. Out back is the neighbor's yard. Your dog goes running there sometimes. Sometimes your dog chases the horse. Is that a good speaker? Are you sick of images? Are you ready for a new image? Do you have comfort with discomfort? Can you develop the right sensibility for this? Are you okay with a partial vision? Have you been up to the second floor? Were you there for the first act? It wasn't very good. Do you know how to carry those things? Have you hiked up anything yet? Is that a slaughterhouse or a bedroom? Can you see the saxophone in the window? Are you a good speaker? Were you there for the first act? Is that a slaughterhouse or a bedroom? Your dog goes running there sometimes. There are 3 stalls on the left and 2 stalls on the right. The cows eat crushed corn and garbage. Is that a slaughterhouse or a bedroom? Have you hiked up Mont Saint-Hilaire? Are you a good speaker? Can you catch up with where you're going? I'm so sick of images. I'm so sick of subculture. Can you develop the right aesthetic for this? Are you okay with an incomplete vision? Were you there for the first act? It was very bad. Is that a slaughterhouse or a bedroom? Are you a good speaker? Can you turn it up a little bit? Have you met your inside? Do you know the moves for that? I'm so sick of images. I'm so sick of subculture. In wreck and fantastic excess, you will sleep all over the place. Is that a slaughterhouse or a bedroom? What I say is you will lose track. You will sleep all over the place. Your skin will be thick with wool and chills will light on your shoulder where there's a chip shinier than the plate that threw itself in wreck and fantastic excess across the living room to break and put the fear of God into me. Is that a slaughterhouse or a bedroom? There are 2 stalls on the left and 3 stalls on the right. Your dog runs there sometimes. The cows were fed crushed corn and garbage. Have you hiked up Mont Saint-Hilaire? Can you see the saxophone in the window? Were you there for the first act? It wasn't very good. A face emerges from the bones. I walk and you walk behind me and we are just talking about one another. A face emerges from the bones. Yes, we are talking now. A face emerges from the bones. I walk and you walk behind me and we are just talking about one another.
Watch for Pedro Show. Last music for this edition. It's Morel Caban. IDM, one piece, and then KY which could be short for Kentucky, or it could be KY Jelly. I don't know. Enlighten us, Dale Kabong. Al Margolis again, right?
Yep, Al Margolis, yep.
Well, how'd it come together and how to develop and all that? What's the nature of these pieces?
These came out recently, and again, these were pieces where we sent files back and forth to each other.
Okay.
And these two pieces were from an album that we put up on Bandcamp where we asked specific people to submit a track. So Kai Brooks from Montreal, they submitted a track, and Idem Festival.
Ah, okay.
Submitted. So those are the two tracks.
Okay. Yeah. And how did El Kabong come about?
Al and I were playing together with a bunch of different people, with Tough Day Tubi, with Three Beards Are Better Than One, with Dave Seidel, some various groups. And then I think it was maybe four years ago or so, I got a call from Al, and he said, I have to go and visit my parents in Florida. I need an excuse. Let's do a tour. So I said, okay, we'll do a tour as a duo, but we need a name. So he came up with El Kabong, and that was our first El Kabong tour.
Does it have anything to do with the fucking Bullwinkle shit?
Oh, well, you know.
Remember when there was something with the hit and somebody with the guitar, right?
Yeah, we don't want to be confused with the cartoon.
Okay.
Basically, If you think of anything, it's like a Swedish manufacturer of, head shop goods.
Yeah. That's a better one. El Kabong. Yeah, the bong.
El Kabong, yeah.
Right. Bong. It's actually spelled with an H from India, right? It was a soup from like 2,000 years ago with mota in it. So what's the process when you and Al get together, you collab, like who goes first?
that's an interesting question, isn't it? It's actually, that comes up in Contact Improv, the dance thing. And Steve Paxton talks about mutuality. In other words, you're both standing there.
Yeah.
Well, I'm supposed to be reacting to something, do something.
Yeah.
You know, so somebody has to start.
Right.
So somebody starts and then it just takes off from there. So quite often, Al starts.
Okay.
But if you've ever played with Al.
Yeah. No, I haven't.
He plays very quietly. Okay. So you might not even know he started. Yeah. So sometimes we both just kind of start very quietly.
Right.
And then we realize that we're both playing.
Okay.
And then it takes off from there.
Right. Yeah. And so you're trying to build an interesting conversation.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. It's a little different with Tough Day Tubing because usually Crank Sturgeon's in the lead. And he's doing a lot of talking with the audience. So we generally follow his lead in that band. He makes up song titles and away we go. But with Al, it's kind of, it's mutuality. We kind of just start a conversation.
Right. Subtle cues. So where can people find you, Walter, on the internet?
Oh, well, if they're looking for sound, they should look up Bandcamp, and they should look up El Kabong.
Okay.
That's where I've got most of the sound files.
And people, basically. I got to spell it for you because it's a little different and not to be confused with a cartoon. It's two words, E-L-K-A, second word, B-O-N-G.
That's correct.
Okay.
The Swedish headshot.
The Swedish headshot. Absolutely. And, I got to tell you, big honor to have you on the show, Walter. Thank you so much. A future plan?
Yeah.
What do you got?
What's that?
Your future plan.
Oh, future plans. Oh, okay. Next week I'm going to Asheville and Roanoke.
That's right.
We're planning perhaps this summer to get a Tough Day Tubing reunion going up in Maine.
Great.
I've got a Kai Brooks. They're working on an LP, actually, which will just be Kai and myself. So that's supposed to come out in the fall. In the fall. Yeah.
Really interesting. I can't wait to hear this stuff. And when you get more stuff out, Walter, please come back on the show. I'd love to have you back and we can wrap it up.
Oh, great. I'd love to. That'd be wonderful.
Thank you so much, Walter. Big love. People, it's been the June 30, 2021 edition of WAP Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.